Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record Program number 492, Musings on the End of One Year and the Beginning of Another. This is being recorded on December 26th of the year 2004. Before we get into the subject material of the program, let me remind you of several websites that have vital information and information which will help some of you, particularly newer listeners, catch up. Sister station WFMU-FM is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs, the last 4 years or so, are on streaming Real Audio at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older shows are available for download only at a longer URL linked to both that address and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. Spitfire is the CD duplication service that stocks the various programs and lectures I've done over the years. They have a website, again, www.spitfirelist.com, that features long descriptions of the various programs and lectures that are available. And in particular, each For the Record show is turned into an article-length, detailed, annotated description within a couple of weeks or so of the airing of the program. The Spitfire website, spitfirelist.com, also has a search function. It has links to the two WFMU sites. It also features the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, the landmark text by the late heroic Paul Manning, that is one of the foundational elements of the research that I'm doing. And in particular, I would note that a working understanding of the Bormann group is something that is at the very core of the broadcast I'm about to do. So do not overlook the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. Again, it's available for download for free on the Spitfire website. There are also links to a website that is maintained by listeners in the Midwest that contains the various declassified U.S. government documents that chronicle the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry before, during, and, in my opinion, most importantly, after World War II. So please be aware of those. We're going to be taking a look at a number of things in this program. Some of this will be by way of review. Some of this will be new material. These musings on the end of one year and the beginning of another are basically going to be dealing with what I call the Underground Reich. Again, a term that will sound utterly fantastic to newer listeners. Unfortunately, I wish that were the case. For a reference point, listeners might want to go to the Encyclopedia Britannica or any other good encyclopedia and look up Mafia. The Mafia, what people basically see in fictional form every Sunday night, those people who tune in HBO and watch The Sopranos, they're looking at a melodrama that deals with an organization that began in Sicily in the 12th and 13th centuries, and specifically, the Mafia began as a resistance movement to Norse and Saracen invaders of Sicily in the 12th and 13th century. Basically, Vikings and Arabs, basically, or Turks, who occupied Sicily. Well, the 13th century is a long time ago. The Vikings and the Turks or the Saracens are long gone from Sicily. But the Mafia, which began at that time as a resistance movement, an underground resistance movement to those occupiers, is still very much present in Sicily. Not only that, but it's very much present in the United States as well. This by way of simply noting that political movements can perpetuate themselves in a very effective, very deadly underground fashion for a long period of time. And that is the case with the Third Reich. And it is one of the dominant realities in the world today and something that a lot more people are actually dealing with than they might realize. We're going to be taking a look at that Underground Reich. But again, for people that might find some of the things that I'm talking about to be utterly incredible, well, again, I would suggest perhaps a good starting point would be to go to, you know, Encyclopedia Britannica or any other good encyclopedia, look up Mafia. And we're going to be taking a look at some manifestations of the Underground Reich in this program. And to flesh out your understanding, please get a hold of the text Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. It's available for download for free on the Spitfire website. As we wind down for the last few days of the year 2004 and look ahead to the year 2005, there are a number of things on the horizon and a number of things to reflect on in connection with the past. There is now a movement afoot to amend the United States Constitution in order to enable Arnold Schwarzenegger, I call him Governor Schwarzenazi of California, to become President of the United States. It is at the present illegal under the U.S. Constitution for someone who was not born in the United States to become president. There is, again, a movement afoot to amend the U.S. Constitution in order to permit Arnold Schwarzenegger to become president or to run as president of the United States. We might both look ahead and look back in this context. The reason why the framers of the Constitution included that particular stipulation in the Constitution was because as they were drawing up the Constitution in the late 18th century, they had in mind some of the recent history in Europe. Specifically, there was a conspiracy between Russia, Prussia, and Austria to take over Poland. And the way the three countries, the three empires, basically did it was to place their puppet on the throne of Poland. And then once they had a puppet on the throne of Poland, Poland was divided up between the three conspiratorial powers. Russia, Prussia, and Austria divided up Poland after they had successfully put their puppet, their protege, onto the Polish throne. It was with that in mind that the framers of the U.S. Constitution stipulated specifically that anyone who was going to become president had to be born in the United States. I've done a number of programs about Arnold Schwarzenegger. Those are available on Real Audio. There are also long, again, written descriptions of those programs available. The written descriptions include information that I did not have time to get in the original broadcasts. But in those programs, the myth of Arnold Schwarzenegger is contrasted with the reality. And there is quite a contrast indeed. And for those people in other parts of the country who may simply be dismissing Arnold Schwarzenegger as a passing fad, or for those listeners who might be seduced by Schwarzenazi, as I call him, with the myth that he is a liberal or a progressive or a different kind of Republican, nothing could be further from the truth. Yeah, he's married to Maria Shriver. Yeah, she's a member of the Kennedy family, but she's a member of the Kennedy family that is associated with Opus Dei, an ultra-reactionary, some might say fascist, lay order within the Vatican that is anything but liberal. Schwarzenegger pays lip service to environmental values. His adherence to those, however, is capricious at best. I will be doing yet another entire program about Governor Schwarzenazi at some point in the future, but suffice it to say, not only his frequently expressed admiration for Hitler, his deliberate and unretracted support for Nazi war criminal Kurt Waldheim, his relatively well-documented racist sentiments, and his anti-Semitism, all of those things, by the way, cosmetically masked by his indulgence in Holocaust remembrance and the millions of dollars he's given to the Wiesenthal Institute, and his schmoozing with Israel, that has served in a public relations sense to mask what Schwarzenazi really is, and what he really is a Nazi, and I'm not being cute. Go to the Spitfire website, take a look at the picture of him from Sports Illustrated, December 7th, 1987, page 84, and you see if you can figure out any other construction to put on that picture. It's basically Schwarzenegger posed in Speedo and mineral oil, standing on top of a mountain. It would appear to be that he's being posed against the background of the Austrian Alps, or perhaps a picture thereof. In any event, he's basically giving the Nazi salute. If this had been a photograph that had been taken at 1 o'clock in the morning when he was drunk on his expletive deleted, well, I might not accord it that much significance. But this was a very deliberate act, and it's just one of a number of very concrete expressions of his inner political persona. And for those people who might think that Arnold Schwarzenegger is not your problem, well, right now he's California's problem, but there are powerful forces at work to try to make him America's problem. And when I update, when I do an entire program updating Governor Schwarzenazi, you're going to see the contrast between the myth and the reality. The reality of Arnold Schwarzenegger, he's exactly the sort of Machiavellian, big business, in your face and up your expletive deleted politician that George Bush is. He pays lip service to certain values, which in practice he betrays. Unfortunately, the media have been only too dutiful in their obeisance to Arnold Schwarzenegger and in the perpetuation of this Hollywood buffoon and his transformation into one of the most cynical power politicians of all time. And it remains to be seen whether the Constitution can be amended. One part of me thinks that Americans are too xenophobic to allow that to happen. On the other hand, the Republicans, and in many ways the Republican Party has simply become a cat's paw for the underground Reich. The Republicans control many state legislatures. They control both houses of Congress. They control the media. They control the executive branch. They control the courts. And they control the voting machines. And those voting machines are funky, as we have last seen in the last three elections. I'll be updating at some point the controversy about how the paper trail-less voting machines performed in the last election, in particular some of the shenanigans in Ohio and Florida. That, however, we will update. Those who might be inclined, as I sometimes am, to think, well, the American people are too xenophobic to go for amending the Constitution, a relatively complicated and elaborate process. Well, who knows? We're seeing an awful lot of things that one might not expect. I thought, however, by way of musing on the end of one year and the beginning of another, we would take a look at the dominant economic power behind Arnold Schwarzenegger. Schwarzenegger has received financial support from a number of interesting people, including various members of the Draper family. The Drapers are old American power elitists. They were deeply involved with the Bush family. William Draper Jr. Headed the Dillon Reed subsidiary that was in many ways the leading institution promoting investment, American investment in Nazi Germany. He then was the general who oversaw the economic reconstruction of Germany, and surprise, surprise, the same elements were put right back in power. His son helped to capitalize some of George W. Bush's business ventures, and Tim Draper has become a Silicon Valley venture capital power in and of his own right. The Drapers are major power brokers. They were the California branch of that family, were major contributors to Arnold Schwarzenegger. The Drapers, by the way, are also in business with the Morgan Taylor Jones family. That is the Lisa Morgan Taylor Jones is the woman who is promoting the Amend for Arnold movement, amend the Constitution for Arnold. But the single greatest economic power behind Arnold Schwarzenegger is a mysterious Idaho-based multi-millionaire or billionaire, nobody knows for sure, a guy named William Armstead Robinson. And William Armstead Robinson, according to attorneys for both UPS and FedEx, is in effect serving as a cat's paw for big German capital, and in fact, for big German capital that are associated with the German post office, Deutsche Post. We're going to take a look at that, and this by way of, again, reflecting on the economic foundations, the economic power behind Governor Schwarzenazi, the Gruppenführer. Research credit on the articles about Armstead Robinson goes to a member of the listening audience. These are all off of the internet, and the full web addresses will be available in the written description for the program. The following is an AP story from Sacramento on the CNN website dated December 3rd of this year. It reads in part, it's headlined, "Reclusive Millionaire Tops Schwarzenegger Donors." He's spent his millions on exotic show horses, a home for retired chimpanzees, and California's actor governor. William Armstead Robinson, founder of the DHL Courier Service, has quietly become a top donor of Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, forming a triumvirate with real estate developer Alex Spanos and Spanish-language TV executive Jerry Parencio. While his counterparts are well-known and well-established in California, Spanos owns the San Diego Chargers, Parencio heads Univision. The 65-year-old Robinson is not. He's an elusive recluse who has spent the last decade mostly sequestered in Idaho, where he has two homes. Robinson's first major contribution to a big-time politician is the $650,000 he has given Schwarzenegger. Skipping down. Speaking of Robinson, he founded Document Handling Limited, DHL, one of the nation's first courier services in 1970, and spent years chasing around the globe to help expand what became DHL Airways and DHL International. United Parcel Service and Federal Express had trouble finding Robinson a year ago when they wanted him to testify at a federal transportation proceeding as they unsuccessfully tried to block his sale of DHL to A-Star Air Cargo Incorporated. Quote, "He's been somewhat mysterious," unquote, said UPS spokesman David Bolger, again quoting, "He's really a colorful character," unquote. Skipping down some of the color of Mr. Robinson. A 2001 book by Washington, D.C.-based Center for Public Integrity titled The Cheating of America alleged DHL was among companies that sheltered its income in international tax havens. A judge ordered DHL to pay $550 million in back taxes and penalties in 1998, but the company appealed and won a partial victory over the value and transfer of the courier company's DHL trademark. We're going to take a look at some of the machinations now unfolding around DHL. Basically, FedEx and UPS are charging that DHL, basically at this point, and William Armstead Robinson, they're charging that Robinson is, for all intents and purposes, a cat's paw for Deutsche Post, the German post office, which owns a nice chunk of one of the associated companies, and according to FedEx and UPS, is in control of DHL. This basically, these allegations would make DHL a cat's paw for big German capital. And at the foundation of big German capital is the Bormann Group. By the way, to understand the economic power that the Bormann Group and the Underground Reich wield, I would refer listeners to For the Record program number 99, Tides of 20th Century Capital Flow. Simply the amount of money that had been looted by the Third Reich from occupied Europe minus what it took from the Soviet Union and Greece, and this only by the end of 1943, was estimated at $180 billion in early 1940s dollars. That is an enormous sum of money. And when one combines that with the capital that was already at their disposal, the capital they looted after the end of 1943, and the capital they received under the Marshall Plan and all of the capital they've earned since, it quite simply, as the late Paul Manning put it, makes the Bormann Group the largest, and he was quoting an international banker, it is the largest concentration of money power under a single control in world history. And that is why I talk about it. As Cicero noted, pecunia nervus belli. Money is the sinew of war. More about the contention between DHL and FedEx/UPS about the German ownership of DHL. And again, in this context, William Armstead Robinson would appear to be the number one financial backer of Schwarzenegger, would appear to be a cat's paw for big German capital. From a cargolaw.com website, Das Citizen, Part 2. As FedEx and UPS Incorporated are asking the Department of Transportation to reject a federal administrative law judge's ruling that A-Star Air Cargo Incorporated is owned and controlled by a U.S. citizen, not a German company. FedEx and Atlanta-based UPS made the comments in a January 26th filing that served as a response to the law judge's December 19th ruling. Final authority rests with the Department of Transportation, which has not said when it will decide. At issue in the fight is the A-Star Air Cargo's ability to do business in the U.S. FedEx in the U.S. FedEx and UPS say Miami-based A-Star, called DHL Airways, under former ownership, should be disqualified because of its ties to the German government. The contention is that A-Star Air Cargo is controlled by German postal monopoly Deutsche Post. It is illegal for foreign companies to own more than 25% of a U.S. domestic air carrier. In April, FedEx and UPS challenged whether DHL Airways met the U.S. citizenship requirements. At the time, 55% of DHL Airways stock was owned by a U.S. citizen, William A. Robinson. On July 14th, a group led by former Northwest Airlines CEO John Dosburg bought all shares of DHL Airways and renamed it A-Star. Still more about the FedEx and UPS contention vis-a-vis DHL. This from the Interpool.com, the cargo letter. American, not German, as DHL Airways has denied in a filing with the U.S. Department of Transportation that it is a German company, as alleged by competitors FedEx and UPS. Under the U.S. law, in a true American corporate citizen, at least 75% of the voting rights must be in American hands, and at least 66% of the board and managing officers must be genuine U.S. citizens. The Department of Transportation has previously stated that DHL Airways is a legal American company, but according to UPS and FedEx, things have changed. The Germans are the boss at DHL, they say. According to DHL, it still complies with the rules, it stated in its finding. Competitors point out that Deutsche Post already owns 50.6% of DHL International and is to buy another 25% from Lufthansa. Of course, Lufthansa is the German government-assisted-slash-controlled airline. DHL Airline is another entity, according to Deutsche Post. In a September 6th PR Newswire release, DHL stated that its largest stockholder is William A. Robinson, a private investor. Robinson, a U.S. citizen, controls 75% of the voting stock and appoints 75% of the airline's board of directors, each of whom must be citizens of the U.S. Stay tuned. Still more about the FedEx and UPS opposition of DHL. This from the KCBS.com website, and this is from November 28th of 2004, Dateline Sacramento, and again, researched for us by that same very sharp-eyed, diligent listener. William Armstead Robinson, a top contributor to Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, founded Document Handling Limited, one of the nation's first courier services, and sold it for $57 million last year. Competitors United Parcel Service and Federal Express, which fought the sale, wanted Robinson to testify that he was merely a financial front for the minority owner Germany's Deutsche Post. This last sentence again, because it's critical. Competitors United Parcel Service and Federal Express, which fought the sale, wanted Robinson to testify that he was merely a financial front for the minority owner Germany's Deutsche Post. The U.S. Department of Transportation eventually ruled against their claim and allowed the sale. In a transcript of his sworn confidential deposition owned by the Associated Press, Robinson said he had no idea how he came up with his $60 million asking price for the company. But when he was offered $37 million, he said he responded, "Just forget it. We're going fishing," unquote. And again, for an individual of this caliber to take such an enormous undertaking so casually defies belief, quite simply. Continuing, if you think that defies belief, check out the following. He testified he disregarded a financial analysis that valued the company at up to $118 million, more than double its ultimate sale price. And Robinson couldn't explain why he was paid $51 million for his 55% share of the company, while Deutsche Post was paid $6 million for the remaining 45%. When Robinson's representative told him $51 million was the best he could get, I said, "Well, I might as well take it," unquote. For all his professed ignorance, Robinson offered two pieces of astute business advice that his former company has since adopted. Asked how DHL could better compete with industry leaders UPS and FedEx, he advised Deutsche Post to launch a, quote, "massive advertising campaign," unquote. And when the new owners proposed to change the name, he called the idea crazy, a dumb thing to do, unquote, because DHL was known all over the world by that acronym. Though the company is now owned by A-Star Air Cargo Incorporated, it recently embarked on a major television advertising campaign under the DHL name. Among investors in the new company is Richard Blum of Blum Capital Partners, husband of Democratic U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein of California. By the way, in connection with the Bormann Group, which controls German heavy industry and finance, they often use Jewish business people as superficial partners. They make a great front. I would note that Dianne Feinstein is obviously one of the major politicians in California, as is Arnold Schwarzenegger. Note, please, that through the DHL nexus, there actually are some business links between DiFi's husband, William Blum, by the way, a member of the Trilateral Commission, and DHL slash Robinson slash Schwarzenegger. Still more on DHL, etc. This from the AP, Dateline Sacramento. We read, he made his first millions as a founder of Document Handling Limited, one of the nation's first courier services in 1970, speaking of Armstead Robinson, and spent years racing around the globe to help expand what became DHL Airways and DHL International. United Parcel Service and Federal Express had trouble finding Robinson a year ago when they wanted him to testify in a U.S. Department of Transportation proceeding as they unsuccessfully tried to block Robinson's sale of the company to A-Star Air Cargo Incorporated, whose investors include Richard Blum, husband of Democratic U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein of California. Quote, "He's been somewhat mysterious," unquote, said UPS spokesman David Bulger, again quoting, He's really a colorful character. Skipping down in his deposition, in it, Robinson professes a near total ignorance of his own financial dealings, saying he delegated everything to two brothers, Roy and Todd Moulton, M-O-U-L-T-O-N, whom he met through the contractor who built his house when he moved to Felt, Idaho in 1991. Roy Moulton was not only Robinson's attorney, but he became chairman of DHL Airways Incorporated, while Todd served as Robinson's financial advisor and the second of three members Robinson appointed to the four-member DHL board. We're going to muse on the Moultons and also the Northwest imperative of the white supremacist movement in the other side of the program. But note that white supremacist elements and neo-Nazi elements have been looking to basically annex the Pacific Northwest, including Oregon, Washington, Idaho, British Columbia, and in some constructs, Montana as well. As part of an Aryan homeland, and we're going to note the some of the German investment in that part of the country, and that could weigh very large after an economic and or ecological catastrophe and or some sort of spectacular terrorist incident that could plunge the United States into ruin. Still more, this is DHL Airways sale on hold by a fellow named William Ombruster. Skipping down. Speaking of this investment, the investment group is led by Chairman, President, and Chief Executive John Dasburg and will change the carrier's name to A-Star Air Cargo after the transaction is completed. By doing so, they hope to defuse a challenge to the airline's citizenship brought by FedEx Corporation and United Parcel Service. U.S. law requires that U.S. citizens must own 55% of the equity and 75% of the voting stock in U.S. airlines. DHL Airways contends that it meets those citizenship requirements because the principal owner is William Robinson, a private investor based in Idaho. FedEx and UPS contend, however, that the airline is actually controlled by Deutsche Post WorldNet, a German-based company, and its subsidiary, Brussels-based DHL Express. The two big U.S. companies argue that regardless of who owns the airline, it will still be controlled by Deutsche Post and DHL Express because it will continue to get almost all of its traffic from DHL Express's U.S.-based subsidiary, DHL World Express. Skipping down, FedEx and UPS have sought to compel testimony from a wide range of Deutsche Post and DHL officials, including Deutsche Post executive Klaus Zumwinkel and DHL chief executive Uwe Dorkin. And note the following. Dasburg, who became chairman and chief executive of the carrier on April 1st, already owns 5% of the airline. Assuming the sale goes through, he will own 40%, while Richard Blum, chairman of San Francisco-based Blum Capital Partners LP, a private equity firm, will hold another 40%. Michael R. Klein, co-founder and chairman of the board of CoStar Group Incorporated and a partner in the Washington-based law firm of Wilmer, Cutler & Pickering, will own the other 20%. That law firm is representing Deutsche Post and DHL in the case before Judge Yoder. We're going to muse on Wilmer Cutler and Pickering in the past. One of their partners is Matthias Wismann, the former treasurer of the German CDU party when it was the focal point of the CDU funding scandals, which heavily overlapped the Bormann Group. I would also note that Wilmer Cutler and Pickering was a law firm we dealt with at considerable length in our series about German corporate control of the American media because they successfully represented Deutsche Telekom in their attempt at getting American law amended so that companies controlled by foreign governments, as Deutsche Telekom is, could control American broadcast outlets. And they successfully did that under good old Michael Powell. We're going to continue with this in the other side of the program. As we take a look at as we muse on the end of one year and the beginning of another, one small thing people might want to do, you may have seen the ads for DHL, you know, the yellow is taking over from the brown, etc. Well, we've got to ship something. Use UPS or FedEx. Skip DHL. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record Program Number 492, Musings on the End of One Year and the Beginning of Another. This is being recorded on December 26th of the year 2004. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.